Welcome everyone to our panel on building solidarity with Iraq civil resistance. I'm sorry to report that Hussein Mahmoud was not able to come to this conference at the last minute. She had a change of plans. She has promised to come to New York in December and speak for anyone who wants to sponsor her. So if people are interested, they should get in touch with either with her at OFI, or I'll give you the URL, or with NOIFS, the sponsor of this panel. NOIFS is a coalition or a group of individuals who are trying to build an anti-war movement that emphasizes solidarity with the grassroots people who are struggling in Iraq for secular, democratic, and progressive society, and who have been fighting since the occupation began against both the occupation, the Baathists, and the political Islamists to make a different kind of society. And NOIFS believes that it's vital to the U.S. anti-war movement, to its own development, to build solidarity and talk about and with these forces on the ground in Iraq. So we're very sorry not to have Hussein. She is the international representative of the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq, which is one of the groups that we are very much in admiration of. My name is Ann Jacquard. I am going to talk a little bit about OFI in her absence and read something she wrote. With me, I'm going to speak first, is Bill Weinberg, who's co-chair of NOIFS, the National Organization for the Iraqi Freedom Struggles. I'm bringing you this pamphlet. Bill is an award-winning journalist, the author of Homage to Chiapas, The New Indigenous Struggles in Mexico, editor of World War IV Report, which is online, and co-host of the weekly WBAI program, Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. So he's been very interested in, worked very hard in these areas. And then on my left is Michael Zweig, a professor of economics at SUNY, at Stony Brook, where he's the director of the Center for Study of Working Class Life. He also represents his union there, and he's on the National Steering Committee of U.S. Labor Against the War. And U.S. Labor Against the War has served to bring Iraqi labor leaders and activists over here to talk and educate, again, the American public on what's going on over there other than what the U.S. government is doing or wants you to know about. So welcome to the panel. Let's begin with Bill Weinberg, who's going to give us an overview of the activities going on the ground in Iraq. We'll do 15 minutes each.
Okay. I'll hang it on for 15 minutes.
Yeah, go.
Okay, most people, even on the left, it seems, are largely unaware that there is a very strong civil resistance in Iraq, which opposes the occupation forthrightly and also opposes the sectarian militias. And basically, the way the media has spun everything which has happened in Iraq has it's sort of been this story about the insurgents versus the occupation, which is attempting to bring a secular state to Iraq. And this is wrong on a couple of levels. For one, it leaves out the civil resistance, the trade unions, the women's organizations, and the other groups which Ann and Michael are going to speak more about. But perhaps even more importantly, it leaves us with the impression that, in fact, the U.S. has been attempting to protect secularism in Iraq from Islamic extremist insurgents. And the part about Islamic extremist insurgents is right, but the part about protecting secularism is not. Because the sectarian militias, which have been tearing Iraq apart, have been, whether they're Shiite or they're Sunni, there are elements which have been in collaboration with the U.S. at various times, and there have been elements which have been in insurgency against the U.S. at various times. Equally, on both sides of this equation, they share the completely reactionary clerical ideology, whether their model is a sort of a Taliban state for the Sunnis, such as existed in Afghanistan, or their model is an Ayatollah state, as in Iran, for the Shiites. The U.S. has collaborated with both at various times in Iraq, and is currently collaborating with both. So it's sort of this false dichotomy that the U.S. is trying to prop up some kind of a secular order, and then you've got these insurgents who are trying to impose Islamic extremism. Because the U.S. has been collaborating with Islamist extremists in Iraq from the very moment that they arrived, and playing the Sunnis and the Shiites off against each other in a sort of a divide and conquer strategy. And arguably, this divide and conquer strategy got out of control and made Iraq ungovernable, even for the occupation. But it's pretty clear that it existed, and I would argue continues to exist. So the group which Huzan works with, as Anne just said, is the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq, ALFI, and Anne is going to speak more about them. They're a very significant pillar of the secular civil resistance in Iraq, which is what we in No Ifs are working to support. Again, which opposes both the sectarian militias, whether they are in occupation, whether they are in collaboration with the occupation or in insurgency against the occupation, and also opposes the occupation. Then there's the labor unions, which are particularly strong in the oil fields in Basra in the south, have been attempting to resist the privatization of the oil resources, and Michael is going to speak more about that. Another pillar of the movement is the are the student organizations, also very powerful, particularly in Basra in the south, and also in the Kurdish territory in the north of the country. And there was one particular incident where at the campus in Basra, the Sadr militia was policing the campus against what was perceived to be un-Islamist behavior, which basically meant young men and young women mixing with each other and having picnics together and on campus and this sort of thing, and the women going unveiled. One such gathering was attacked by the Sadr militia, and a student was killed. And this happened, I believe, in 2005, if memory serves. And subsequent to this, there was a big mobilization by the students in Basra, and it was joined in solidarity by other student organizations on campuses elsewhere around Iraq, particularly in Kurdistan in the north. They basically demanded that the campuses be free zones, and that the Sadr militia would have to leave the campus. And they won this struggle. This was there are three elements which sort of came together in 2005 to form an organization called the Iraq Freedom Congress, the IFC, which is attempting to bring together all of the forces in Iraq which are willing to join under two minimum demands, the first being an end to the U.S. occupation. The second being a secular state, opposing the Shiite militias and the Sunni militias, and as well as the Kurdish nationalist parties which control the north, and basically demanding an Iraq where everybody is equal and citizenship is not defined by religious affiliation or by ethnicity. So again, they've been attempting to bring together all the elements in Iraq which will meet these two minimum demands. They've had some experiments with attempting to establish their own self-governing enclaves or neighborhoods, particularly in Baghdad and in Kirkuk. It has to be said that this strategy of forming this broad-based coalition around these two minimum demands there's been a certain amount of debate and controversy within Iraq's civil resistance around this. A lot of the civil resistance is coming out of the socialist movement in Iraq, and it should be said that the Iraqi Communist Party is not a part of this movement. And in fact, they had collaborated with Saddam Hussein during the periods when they could, at the time when they weren't being persecuted by Saddam. They sort of took the bait and joined his rubber stamp parliament. And now they've done exactly the same thing. From the moment that the U.S. arrived, they assumed seats in the interim government, which the United States established. There is a group called the Worker Communist Party of Iraq, the WCPI, which was formed in the immediate aftermath of Operation Desert Storm, which saw that both the rise of political Islam and of U.S. hegemony in the post-Cold War world called for a return to real grassroots militant worker organization in the Persian Gulf region. So this group has been very supportive of all these various strains which have gone into making up the civil resistance in Iraq. And they themselves, there's division within the WCPI about the IFC's strategy of as broad-based a coalition as possible and emphasizing the demands of a secular state and the U.S. leaving, the occupation leaving, as opposed to emphasizing socialism. Although there certainly is broad agreement about the need to protect Iraq's resources from privatization and all this sort of thing. I would say that our view, as NOIFS, the National Organization for the Iraqi Freedom Struggles, is we don't feel the need to take sides in the internal debates which are going on within the Iraqi civil resistance. They're entitled to have respectful disagreements with each other, and we're entitled to have respectful disagreements with them. What's necessary is building solidarity. Beyond that, what's necessary is to, and a part of building solidarity, is to actually give them a voice within anti-war organizing and efforts which are taking place here in the United States, and actually to seek leadership from Iraqis, from the Iraqis who share our values and share our struggles as progressives and dissidents, if you will, here in the United States. So I would say, NOIFS is not merely a solidarity organization. We are that to the best of our abilities, but we're also trying to influence the debate within the anti-war movement here in the United States. So I'm going to speak a little bit about that. Unfortunately, I'd like to think that. Perhaps how many people have showed up who are not actually with the group? One, two, three, four at the panel. I would like to think that this has to do with the fact that it's 10 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday, and there are an awful lot of panels which are happening. But it has been a source of frustration, certainly a great deal of frustration for me, how little interest there has been in doing this kind of solidarity work and actually seeking leadership from the people who are waging struggles against the occupation on the ground in Iraq in the anti-war movement in this country. Now, of the major anti-war conglomerations, and I certainly don't count NOIFS as a major anti-war conglomeration, we're definitely a minor anti-war conglomeration, although an important one, I would argue. But among the major ones, the only one which has really sort of risen to the occasion and really taken on the kind of work which we feel needs to be done is U.S. Labor Against the War, which Michael represents. Of the three big major coalitions, well, you've got United for Peace and Justice, which it really has not been taking on this kind of work in an aggressive way. U.S. Law, I believe, is a member of United for Peace and Justice. Yes. At least their member organizations, at least one of their member organizations is taking on this kind of work. But United for Peace and Justice, which actually, you know, controls the stage at the big rallies and so on, they've been a little bit slow to take this kind of work on and to take this kind of analysis on, which is why one of the reasons NOIFS was formed was to try to try to move them in that direction and to try to bring these issues to the fore. The other two major conglomerations in the anti-war movement are unfortunately even worse. That's ANSWER and Troops Out Now, which consciously take a position of not loaning any concrete solidarity to the civil resistance in Iraq, actually have a line against this. And instead, they have this sort of notion of vague solidarity, well, not concrete solidarity, not actually doing the kind of, you know, basic human-to-human solidarity work which we're attempting to do, but a much more vague, rhetorical kind of solidarity, not with the civil resistance in Iraq, but with what they call the insurgents, which to my mind is an entirely too flattering term. I would prefer to say the sectarian militias, who are vigorously attempting to exterminate the civil resistance in Iraq. Once again, these sectarian militias have been, there's been a whole slew for the past several years now, particularly of trade unionists being assassinated by sectarian militias, as well as directly by the U.S. occupation forces. And this violence has come both from sectarian militias who are in collaboration and are in insurgency. And in fact, you know, the deck has been shuffled so many times that various ones have been in insurgency or in collaboration at various times, and I'll say a bit more about that. Particularly, I mean, the Badr militia is kind of indistinguishable from the troops of the Iraqi Interior Ministry, and they've certainly been responsible for some of this violence. But also the elements, the Sunni insurgents, which have been mixed up with Al-Qaeda, which does exist, by the way, have also been responsible for this kind of violence. And they, you know, have been quite clear, the sectarian militias have been quite clear that they don't want to see a secular future for Iraq, and that they oppose the labor organizations and so on, which do want to see a secular future for Iraq. So, quite frankly, you know, it's kind of disgraceful that large elements of the anti-war movement in this country are cheering on the elements in Iraq which are vigorously attempting to exterminate the secular left in Iraq and the people who are waging battles in Iraq, which we, the anti-war movement, should be supporting. Now, I'm speaking here on behalf of NOIFS, and U.S. Law, I believe, has a somewhat different perspective on this question, which maybe Michael will want to speak to, or maybe not, but in any event, we can agree to disagree. I just wanted to say one final thing about this whole question of the sectarian militias and the fact that some of the same ones which have been in insurgency have more recently been in collaboration with the occupation. And this is particularly true of the so-called awakening councils. The notion that, you know, the so-called surge has been a success, I think is faulty a couple of ways. One of the ways it's faulty is that Well, yes, the violence in Iraq is not at the, you know, near apocalyptic levels that it was at 2 or 3 years ago, but it's still at utterly, utterly nightmarish levels. And if, you know, the kind of ongoing, near daily terror attacks and so on, which are taking place in Iraq, were happening in any city in the Western world or any country in the Western world, it would be front page headlines. But because it's Iraq and we're all inured to it at this point, you know, it's always, you know, buried on page 92 of a 91-page newspaper. But the second way in which it's in which this notion that the surge has been successful is faulty is that I don't think that it's been pouring more troops into Iraq, which has chilled out the situation somewhat. But the fact that the Sunni insurgents have largely been bought off with U.S. largesse, U.S. money, U.S. guns, U.S. political support to form these so-called awakening councils. And the difference is that now they're collaborating with the U.S. as opposed to fighting the U.S. But that's the only difference. Their ideology has not changed. They are still attempting to impose Sharia law. They are still attempting to completely repeal women's rights. And they are still attempting to form their own sort of Taliban-style enclaves, only now they aren't shooting at U.S. soldiers anymore. And that's about the extent of what has changed. So this seems to be, because it's met with a certain degree of what the media and the government are calling success, it seems that this is a strategy which is being replicated elsewhere, where the U.S. and its allies or proxies are waging wars against Islamist insurgents, particularly with the Peace for Sharia deal, which has just been struck in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. And now, apparently, there's talk of attempting to do the same thing in Somalia, where the transitional federal government, which the U.S. has been backing there, has now also just voted to instate Sharia law in Somalia. So, once again, you know, yes, we oppose the fact that U.S. drones are dropping missiles on a near daily basis in Pakistan. And in fact, this allows the insurgents in Pakistan to paint themselves in favorable terms as the resistance, just as it allowed the Sunni militias in Iraq to do the same thing. So, of course, we have to oppose this. But I think that we also have to oppose surrendering to Sharia zones and allowing women's rights to be repealed and so on. This isn't the answer either. And there are groups in the borderlands in Pakistan and in Afghanistan, such as the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan, who are doing the same kind of vital work of trying to protect the same basic liberties which we've been fighting for all these years here in the West, in Afghanistan and Pakistan, who also need our support. So, the surrealists used to have a slogan called "Neither your war nor your peace," and I think this really speaks to the potentially very dangerous terms on which the Obama administration might try to broker something called peace in Iraq as well as in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Somalia. So we've got a lot of work to do to try to build the kind of solidarity which is necessary and to give the voices which are struggling for a progressive order and a secular order and an anti-imperialist order in Iraq and elsewhere in the Islamic world, to give them the kind of voice and that they need, and in fact the leadership position in the anti-war movements in this country that we feel is mandated.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. I think I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Ann Jacquard. I'm a founding member of No Ifs. I'm also part of a brand new organization called the Marxist Humanist Initiative. And I'll be speaking on a panel at 3 o'clock 3 o'clock today called Concretizing Marx's Alternative to Capitalism, a Marxist Humanist Perspective. So I invite you to that. I'm a very long time activist and the anti-war and feminist movements, as you'll hear from my remarks. I really appreciate Bill's overview and his emphasis on the fact that women are actually losing rights in Iraq. I mean, I'm going to tell you about the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq. It's a wonderful organization, but mostly they're failing to stem the tide against political Islam. But let me start at the beginning. Following the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, while anti-war activists like me were despairing over our inability to prevent Bush's invasion of Iraq, the Iraqi feminists took matters in their own hands by forming, just 3 months after the invasion, in June of 2003, the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq. And you can see their website, it's equalityiniraq.com. And you can see some of their history there. Some of the feminists who went there had been living in exile, like Yanar Mohammed, who spends part of her time there and part of her time in more peaceful places. Husan Mahmoud lives in London, so she's not in constant danger. But dangerous it was to go there in the midst of the fighting and the chaos of the U.S. trying to establish its occupation. And in spite of this atmosphere, they immediately began to recruit women and started some very ambitious tasks. They began a newspaper, Musawat, which means equality, and got it all over the country, and they still do, as far as I know. They publish about 10,000 copies of each newspaper, but it's read by many more people because it's passed hand to hand. And it discusses women's issues and calls for complete legal and social equality. They establish safe houses for women who are in danger from honor killings, which, as you probably have been reading about, more and more murders and even stonings of women in Iraq and other places. It's a terrible problem, and it's actually again, probably increasing in Kurdistan and other areas that had some semblance of secular life and don't anymore. The other big activity that OFI engaged in over the last 6 years is trying to get laws that would protect women and give women equality. So they were constantly petitioning the U.S. occupiers to, you know, do what they said, that U.S. stood for freedom for women, ha-ha. So they were always demanding that the interim government do much more than it did. What it did was things like, when OFI held an International Women's Day demonstration, several of them, and expected the U.S. occupiers to protect them from the mobs of angry political Islamists who wanted to kill them, they didn't even get that kind of protection very much. Once, I remember one photograph that OFI showed where the U.S. troops are surrounding a demonstration, and they're pointing their guns and bayonets in at the women instead of out at the crowds. So you sort of wonder what kind of protection that is and what kind of message it's giving, except to you know, keep their demonstration small, keep anyone from joining it. And the last few years, I think they haven't even been able to demonstrate outside. They've had to have their International Women's Day activities inside. So things are not good. And the laws are not good. For the first several years of OHI's existence, they did manage to keep Sharia out and laws in instituting women's secondary status out. And they had some victories in the nascent Iraqi parliament, but now they've had a lot of losses. And the death threats have been constant. I was among a small group of New York feminists who first brought OHI to the attention of people in the United States, or at least in New York, when we brought Yanar Mohammed in October of 2003, just right after the formation and activities of OHI began. And we brought Yanar from Iraq to come and speak. Actually, it was right here at Pace University, which gave us the auditorium and the theater and helped put it on. Now since then she's gained some fame among feminists and gotten human rights rewards and awards and all kinds of things. But what we expressed in having her here was a type of people-to-people solidarity with grassroots secular organizations that we hoped would bring a totally new dimension to the U.S. anti-war movement. Unfortunately, as Bill has said, we didn't succeed. Too many anti-war people have taken the position that they must support the Islamists as the lesser evil to U.S. imperialism. Lesser evil to whom, one might ask. Certainly, the women are not taking that position. They are taking the position. You fight occupation. You fight suppression of women. You fight on all fronts at once. Here's some of what I wrote about OHI in October of 2003, when I first met Yanar. A radical Iraqi feminist organization has emerged from the ashes of Baghdad, presenting a challenge to women's anti-war and left movements around the globe, not only to support the Iraqi women, but also to exchange ideas with them about creating a different world. OHI was founded in June to stop post-war atrocities against women and to fight for women's equality. By its very existence and in its writings, OHI illuminates the internationalism of the concept of women's liberation and invites us to work out its meaning in a new way. OHI's statement of founding begins, quote, "Women's freedom is the measure of freedom and humanity in society. Not only in Iraq, where women endure the most severe types of discrimination and injustice, but also in the more developed countries in the world today, the realization of full equality among women and men still requires continuous struggle and serious and rapid steps. OHI considers itself basically an indivisible part of the great historic and universal struggle for women's liberation." Let me now read a little bit from a statement that Husan Mahmoud, who we hope to have another time here, this is what she wrote as international representative of OHI on International Women's Day in 2006. This is while they were in the midst of a struggle to defeat the plans for Sharia law in Iraq and trying to get that equality in their constitution. And she wrote, "Make it a day to say no to Islamic Sharia law in Iraq. For secularism, equality, and freedom. The Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq sends its greetings for this historic day to women activists all over the world. For centuries, women have been struggling for their rights and for equality and liberation in all parts of the world. Major changes have been won, but nowhere do we have real equality, and in many parts of the world, the oppression and exploitation of women are still striking. Iraq is one of these places. The U.S.-UK occupation has pushed Iraqi society back into a medieval world in which, quote, honor killings, beheadings, forced veiling, and seclusion and sexual servitude are now a part of everyday life. Now the reactionary tribalist and sectarian government the U.S. has installed in Iraq wants to go further by institutionalizing the oppression of Iraqi women. The outcome of a war and occupation which was sold to the world as bringing, quote, liberation and, quote, democracy, has been a hand-picked group of political hacks and tribal elders imposed on Iraqi society. Oh, could you, Andrew, maybe, yeah, it's a, okay. Political hacks and tribal elders imposed on Iraqi society through a pseudo-parliament and a constitution that makes women second-class citizens. For the last 3 years, Iraqi women have stood up against not only the occupation, but against political Islamist groups who are fighting to establish an Iranian or Saudi Arabian type regime of gender apartheid, with all marital and family matters regulated by Islamic Sharia law. OFI is fighting to mobilize Iraqi women and their supporters across the world against the occupation and Islamization of Iraq. The USA and its allies claim that it is facilitating our subjugation, they are respecting, quote, Islamic culture and, quote, Arab culture. We say that this viewpoint, permanently relegating people in the so-called Muslim world to barbarism, borders on racism. We oppose politicized religion and demand a secular and egalitarian constitution for Iraq. They want to divide people along lines of religion, ethnicity, and gender. We are demanding equality for all Iraqis, regardless of their origin. Women in Iraq need your support more than ever. OFI has been able to maintain and continue its work because of international support and solidarity, because of solidarity from women's progressive and workers' organizations all over the world, helping us to stand firm for our lives and our liberties. We call upon you to join us this International Women's Day. Say no to religious law in Iraq, yes to equality and freedom. So that was 3 years ago. let me see. I just wanted to say that the feminist movement has been much more supportive, such as the feminist movement is. It's not very strong anymore, but much more supportive of OFI than the general anti-war movement has been. What has been lacking, however, I think, is a dialogue on the larger issues. What alternatives are possible? How can we escape the pulls of both capitalist and religious unfreedoms? I know OFI would like to discuss these things, but I'm saying that the feminists who are helping them generally just want to keep it on the issue of women's oppression. So we are struggling, some of us are struggling here as well as there, to discuss the larger issues and to reject secular capitalist society as well as Islamist society as a lesser evil. this posing of the question, should women have the right to a secular society, even if capitalist, this posing of the question as if the two were opposites, I think, means death for revolutionary movements. Such lesser evilism, like the anti-war movement, has practiced in saying you can only oppose U.S. imperialism, or like feminists have practiced saying, don't get too revolutionary there, OFI. This lesser evilism always concedes the idea of freedom to the powers that exist. Some of us want instead to change the discussion to how to win what OFI's founding statement calls the, quote, great historic and universal struggle for women's liberation. Thank you.